Welcome to the RAND CRE Show. Commercial real estate with no stone left unturned.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the RAND CRE Show. I'm your host, Mike Taravella. And today, I have the honor and privilege of speaking with Neil Walgren. He is in charge of MAG Capital Partners. He himself has raised over $450 million, has led a group in the Bay Area, have an assets under management over $500 million, and MAG Capital Partners considers investments between $5 million and $100 million, focusing on industrial net lease, sales leaseback, and commercial developments. Most importantly, he is a veteran in the Air Force and Navy, so thank you for your service, and welcome to the show. Neil, how's it going?
That's great. Yeah, thanks for having me on, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing that we haven't had RAND CRE Show first is triple net leases. We've kind of talked about them like very high level. You hear the mailbox money, but we'd love to have a professional like yourself kind of go give some little more color, a little more light on the process on the investing side and what you seem to be the pros with triple net versus, we'll say, multifamily, and have the great debate.
I like it. So, you know, really triple net, you're going to see a triple net lease structure in certain asset types more than others, right? So, I mean, let's take, a very common entry point commercial real estate class is multifamily. On those, you're never going to see a triple net lease, right? You could never expect, you know.
You don't trust a resident for 10 years in one spot? Come on.
Exactly, right? Yeah. So those are typically gross or modified gross leases where the landlord is paying all or the majority of taxes, of insurance, of utilities. Sometimes they'll backbill the tenant for some parts of those, but let's start with a kind of textbook definition. So a triple net lease, otherwise known as a NNN lease. Those three N's are going to refer to three expense categories that are moved from the landlord to the tenant. The first is going to be property tax. And so in a triple net lease, your tenant is going to typically either pay or fully back pay the full extent of the property tax in the real estate that they're occupying. The second is going to be insurance. So in an effective triple net lease, the landlord is going to dictate a certain amount of insurance requirement. However, the tenant is going to pay both the premiums and the deductible for any claims in that insurance relationship. So the landlord has said, hey, you need to be insured for this amount, but you're going to pay for it. And then the third piece is going to be utilities. That there's a little bit of variance in that. So in a multi-tenant retail where a retail tenant has a triple net lease, they're likely just going to pay for their incremental piece of the utilities, right? That might be gas, might be electric, might be water, some combination of that, trash. On a single tenant triple net, that utility aspect will typically expand to mean full building upkeep and maintenance. That'll mean new roofs, that'll mean new HVAC, that'll mean even exteriors like pavement repairs, landscape, and really fence line to fence line if that triple net lease is on a single tenant relationship. From a 30,000 foot view, a triple net lease effectively removes all the operational risk, the unknown expense items, moves them from a landlord to the tenant. So as an investment group or a landlord, you have much more predictable, really consistent cash flow coming from that investment.
No, that's great. And I like how you claim the insurance to be an effective triple net, because I think just hearing like the insurance, I would have never thought to be like dictating the insurance and the premium. And then for the utilities, is it generally based on if it's multiple based on square foot, rentable square feet? Is that kind of the metric that they bill back on?
So it depends, right? You can have a modified gross lease might say, hey, the tenant's going to pay, full utilities up to a stopgap, up to a ceiling. But in a true triple net, 100% of those utility obligations typically are paid directly by the tenant.
Okay, that's awesome. And I know that's good to know, because on the multifamily side, it's, as you know, an absolute, it could be a wild card and individually levered and everything. Mm-hmm. and with kind of, with 2020 and people talking about COVID, what are some things, I know as with multifamily is rating the, we call them resident, but the triple net is tenant. How do you rate that? you know, looking at a triple net lease, like rating the tenant in there and versus, you know, other candidates for that potential lease?
Yeah, no, great question. So industrial is unique in that the majority of light industrial, which is the type of real estate we buy, it's almost always single tenant, right? So you have a building, it's usually fully occupied. And this, you know, maybe to move back a step here to look at the different kinds of industrial and how those lease relationships tie in. So, you know, on one end of the spectrum for industrial, you have a much more similar dynamic to multi-tenant retail. And they call that flex industrial typically. So you'll see, you know, you'll see them maybe driving down the highway sometimes, these long buildings, many, you know, kind of pull up doors with truck bays in. And that long building is usually subdivided into, you know, it could be three or even, you know, 20 different, 20 different subleasable spaces there divisible spaces. And ultimately, each one of those, you'll usually need property management and really a very similar investment style to a multi-tenant retail there. In those cases, you know, the leases might be triple net, they might be gross, maybe some combination. And then the other side, you're going to see more of the warehouse, distribution, and manufacturing. And those typically are a single building, a single tenant, typically much longer term leases. Usually you're looking at 10 to 20 year leases on those. Especially when that lease is first signed. And really those tenants typically have much longer tenure there. Just to use an example, you know, on our investments, our average tenant has probably been in place 30 to 70 years in that location. They're manufacturing. They've customized that piece of real estate to really suit their needs over the years. And honestly, you know, usually they have good basis in it. Their opportunity cost would be, you know, much higher if they wanted to move to new real estate. And honestly, if it's working, it's working. So that's a nice relationship that we like from the investor side too.
Yeah, no, that's I couldn't, for that type of tenant too, it's looking at it as the opportunity cost to stop production, to move and migrate and build out is so high that there's so much communication and leeway on the front end. Versus like the smaller, when you have the 20 bays, I can't even imagine the property management on that aspect, because it's seeing some triple net and some adjusted growth. It's just every lease can be so different. So it just, it blows my mind, because on the multifamily, it's all right, generally 1 year lease, here's what the market gives and we're going, but I couldn't even imagine the property management. And I'm sure the stories behind the property managers for the light industrial, the flex industrial.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be honest, in a absolute triple net lease where they're covering, you know, exterior and interior and building maintenance, we typically don't have property management. It's what we call self-managed, right? I mean, they're responsible for all their own upkeep, repairs. You know, every 2 years we'll send in a building inspector to kind of, you know, keep an eye on the place and tell them, hey, you need to fix X, Y, and Z, but it's still their responsibility. And there's no true property management in the sense that you have on other asset classes.
That sounds too good to be true, Neil. Just check on it, you know, five times on the 10-year lease. And I mean, that sounds amazing. What are some things that you've kind of seen so that like investors need to be watching out for? Because they'd be like, Neil, just I'm all in on triple net. Like what do I need to look out for when underwriting or just understanding the triple net lease markets?
Yeah, no, great question. You know, I'll talk more specifically on the single tenant triple net, just because that's our bread and butter.
Because we don't have 2 hours to talk about each one.
Exactly. But no, I mean, really the, you know, it's important to know where does the risk lie, right? And the risk profile on a single tenant triple net investment is going to be substantially different than say a multi-tenant multifamily investment, right? So, you know, just from a comparative standpoint, you know, in a multifamily deal, usually there's some value add. You know, you buy theoretically a sub-performing property. You say, hey, I have a business plan. After I purchase it, I'm going to get to work. I'm going to do some capital improvements, new cabinets, new countertops. I think with these improvements, I can raise the rent. I think I can also raise occupancy, usually some combination of that to build value, build cash flow, and ideally see an attractive return. With a triple net status, it's different. It's more of a defensive play. So, you know, we come in, we're almost always fully occupied. So you have 100% occupancy. That lease will typically have built-in rent bumps. So you have, you know, basically full occupancy, you have an increasing set of cash flows every year as those rent bumps kick in. And now really you're looking to protect that. And the way you protect that is by looking at the credit of your tenant. So that tenant credit is absolutely your most outsized risk in a triple net deal. You know, effectively, if they're in business, if they're paying rent, everything goes to plan. But if they don't, then you could find yourself having to release an empty building, and suddenly, you know, you have a lot more chaos in what hopefully should have been a much more predictable investment. So that credit analysis, that, you know, really looking under the hood, feeling good on the historical financial picture, feeling good about what's to come, both from this particular company and the industry that they're in. Understanding that piece is really the crux on an investment going to plan, having very predictable income versus, you know, having a lot more variability and risk.
Which I'm laughing because I'm just thinking of like 2020 and like just hearing stories of like Cheesecake Factories not paying their lease, their rent.
Yeah.
On top of like industrial, I've heard was just booming just because everything was in high production and such supply and demand. I'm sure similar to multifamily, it was a wild 2020 and 2021 moving forward to figuring out every day the values changed so drastically.
Yeah, it's, you know, we were lucky in the industrial side, really twofold. One is, you know, the states that house a lot of, you know, national manufacturers, typically just from a geographic standpoint, being Midwest located, Texas all the way, say, through Michigan, that central U.S. geographic line there makes sense from a production standpoint. You're able to ship, you know, coast to coast cheaper. And also, you know, the business approach of those states tended to be much more business friendly than a lot of coastal markets throughout COVID. So we were lucky. I mean, honestly, I think we had about 25 properties going into COVID at the start of 2020. All but one were deemed essential, able to, you know, keep operating. I think at the worst case ones had, you know, maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks of closure. But after that, we're able to kickstart again and then, you know, keep producing. And most of them saw, you know, starting near the end of 2020, actually saw some considerable business growth throughout that period. The one exception we had was a single tenant net lease of a gym, a health club. So that one obviously was forced closed. But, you know, they came to us early and said, hey, we're closed. We don't know how long. We negotiated effectively a 90-day pause on rent. We negotiated the same thing with our lender, 90-day pause on debt service. And luckily, after 45 days, they were in the state of Iowa. Iowa's like, get back to work, open up. And they were able to catch up almost immediately and, you know, ended up working out pretty well.
That's awesome. No, and that's, yeah. I mean, that transparency is huge in doing business because it's all relationship based. And even just like thinking of that, I mean, we saw the properties that took those pauses like very prematurely. It was like, hey, don't pay rent. Well, it's like, well, your value is based on your profitability. And if you're not profitable and you're paying mortgage payments, it hurts you. Yep. And then you're trying to list it 3 months later. It's like, what happened? So <Yep. laughs> it's a business, and it's good to hear everything going really well for the single family we talked about, but for the multi tenant properties, how do you kind of adjust like the credit? I'm sure it's more risk inherently for the smaller mom and pop operation, but how does it, like, do you take into consideration, like, this is a service, like a hair, like a barber and all these other things, and like versus a restaurant versus like a law office? Like, how do you kind of put the pieces together to form like the most profitable and beneficial unit mix?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, really, I've heard triple net real estate investments described as a bond wrapped in real estate. So imagine you're investing in bonds. You're going to have bond ratings typically by S&P, by Moody's, Finch's, you know, effectively giving them, you know, an A rating all the way down to a junk bond, you know, might be D, or I don't know how low they go, but
yeah. That just doesn't show how good your tenants are, Neil.
penny stocks, right? No. Yeah. But no, I mean, and that bond is going to be effectively your, you know, aggregate credit risk. And from a bond standpoint, you're making an assessment on, you know, really this company's ability to pay its obligations and to stay profitable and in business. It's really not so different in the real estate side, where, you know, if you're buying, you know, say a multi-tenant retail center or even multi-tenant industrial, say with smaller, you know, we call them either microcredit or even junk credit type of tenants. And those might be, you know, your single owner hair salon, or, you know, your nail shop, or, you know, those, a lot of those retail type of businesses still might be triple net leases. However, those leases are going to be really as good as the individuals behind them, right? You'll almost always, the company itself will be so small, there's no real corporate credit. So you'll require personal guarantees from the owners of those businesses, because that's, from a securitization standpoint, that's where you get better credit, right? And as you kind of escalate, eventually the corporation becomes strong enough where the corporate credit can, you know, effectively satisfy that credit worthiness that you require for those leases. And so that's the kind of the space more on the manufacturing side. You know, on average, our tenants do, you know, between 50 and 150 million a year in revenue. You know, they have, you know, they're, a lot of times they're private equity backed. They're much more substantial companies, usually a couple hundred employees. When you get to that size, many times they're still privately held. So we call it private credit, where we have to do our own analysis in-house. You know, there's no outside credit agency. However, that company is typically large enough to feel good. You don't need an external personal guarantee from the owner, because that company itself has enough cash flow reserves, you know, operating history to, you know, effectively feel good that they're going to keep paying their lease.
Yeah. Plus, like, the years, and, you know, there's some sort of review or audited financials where they're looking at it. Plus, I'm sure in that type of group, that private, you're having these relationships throughout. And so I'm sure, especially given, like you said, the national private equity backed, they're not, the reporting's okay. It's not a mom and pop nail salon next to a Target. These are very savvy, sophisticated, which I'm just like laughing on the multifamily side. It's like income is like three times rent on top of no eviction. So it's just like, it's like an oversimplification of the process, but it's just like, it's more backed, like you said, real estate plus bond, but it's backed by so much more sophisticated, savvy operators versus like an average everyday resident per se.
Exactly. And to add on that, you know, really that lease contract is your securitization, right? So the strength of that lease is really the strength of the reliability of those cash flows, because you want to say, hey, I want this lease to be so watertight that if this company is financially viable and they decide not to pay the rent, there will be zero doubt that I will win in a, you know, court ordered judgment in that case, right? And on top of that, in these leases, we actually require our tenants to furnish us quarterly financials. So not only are we doing a huge amount of due diligence up front, say, hey, do we want to go into this investment? You know, over 5 years, a lot can happen on the credit of a company. So we actually, we require in the terms of the lease, quarterly financial statements, and then once a year, annual audited financials, where we are getting a very deep dive. Our credit team looks at the ongoing ebb and flow of that credit picture during the hold. And now this allows us to be proactive as managers and as sponsors of an investment, right? So, you know, let's say the world happens, right? You know, this company, we bought the real estate, you know, they started off great and things have happened, and maybe their gross revenues are going down, or their, you know, margins are shrinking, taking on more debt. It could be a combination, right? And suddenly they're no longer looking as rosy as a tenant as, you know, we once saw. By requiring those quarterly financials, we can stay on top of that decision-making curve. You know, we're not being reactive, we're being proactive. And now we can say, hey, do we start a conversation with the tenant? Do we, you know, work with their credit facilities to see if they can get better, you know, better funding or private equity backing, whatever that might look like? Or, you know, more common, if they start degrading their credit, we can just say, hey, you know, we're going to sell early. You know, this deal no longer looks as great. I might give up some of the back end that I was hoping for, but if I can sell early and still return investor capital, I mean, that means you've lived to fight another day, you know, redeploy that capital in something better, you know, and then at that point, you know, that's a win-win typically all around.
Yeah. I love the aggressive defensive approach, because you're constantly measuring to make sure your assumptions were through and through of just the probability of paying. So the quarterly is huge. Audited finance. I was an auditor for Ernst & Young. So just
Okay, you get it.
Never want to see going concern. And I've seen a couple of those for some properties and we're like, that's not good. But that aggressive defense, which is actually funny because I was just thinking too, is like I've seen a lot of like triple net that are like the leases are expiring in 2 years. And so when I say a lot, I mean handful, but trying to just learn and understand more. That lease is expiring in 2 to 4 years. You know, how, I know like the probability of renewing is a huge piece, but then how do you, I mean, is it okay to ask as part of due diligence? Do you have to get under contract? It's just like, I guess it's like when you're looking at a deal with some life on the lease, you know, think considering probability, but also like turnover of like how long to expect that for like these very odd fitting pieces, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, so really in a single tenant investment, you have two main categories of risk, right? You have operational risk, which is all the expenses, the unknowns. We've effectively removed that operational risk through a triple net lease structure. So they, you know, surprises still happen, you know, tax assessors. you know, premiums increase, tax assessment increases, but all that, all those surprises fall on our tenant, not us, right? And the second piece is the renewal, you know, really the releasing risk, right? When I hit the end of my lease, is my tenant can exercise their options? You know, really that, am I going to end up with an empty building? And the way we modify or mitigate that risk is we purchase most of our buildings through what's called sale leaseback. So we are buying our real estate from an owner occupant. So imagine a manufacturing company that owns the real estate they operate out of. Mm-hmm. We buy the real estate off them and then lease it back to them, typically with a brand new 20-year net lease. So that 20-year lease, we're not holding 20 years. We're usually holding, you know, 4 to 5 years. We're taking basically premium off the front end of that lease. And when we go to sell, we typically have about 15 years left on that. So we're able to sell to a number of different buyers. There's still a lot of term on that lease. And really anything north of about 8 to 10 years, anything greater than that is viewed as a, you know, kind of attractive premium type of lease. And we're able to sell at a premium accordingly. So we have chosen that front end of that lease there as our kind of business model. So we don't even think about the releasing event. Those who do will be able to buy, you know, at a relative discount if there's a small amount of term left on that lease, because now they're taking on more risk on analyzing, hey, is this tenant going to renew? And then you're looking at, are they below market? Are they above market on rents? Would I want them to not renew? You know, maybe if they're 40% below market, which happens sometimes after a long-term lease, maybe I want them to leave, right? Then now I can release it and have a major value add. But suddenly there's just a lot more, you know, type of
entropy.
There's just a lot more friction and opportunity that comes in that. And it's just a different risk profile for an investor. So some investment groups love that, you know, kind of, you know, try to buy it at a discount, you know, roll the dice a little bit and see, you know, hey, do I want them to leave or however that might look? That's more of a value add type of investor approach, whereas we're much more of that income, reliable income, remove the risk, you know, and really have just consistent cash flow. And that's, you know, just a different risk profile.
I think of it as like the heavy value add versus you're looking at like the class A, like, hey, we can sell this thing to anyone. And having having those flexibility is like, that's when you know you have a good business plan, because I've seen, you know, we have an education company working with students and they're like, if everything hits, then we'll make money. And I was like, that is the scariest business plan of if the refi, right? If rates stay the same or go down, if this happens, if this happens, if this happens, and if this happens, then it's like, no. If this, it's like, you got to have your exit strategies several different ways, because you don't know, like, 2020, right? We were operating two properties in Kentucky in Louisville, and it's just, now we had to allow Section 8 and the government. It's just like so many different factors that weigh into it, that you have to have those bountiful exit strategies that help protect your investors and your downside.
Oh, yeah. I was a statistics minor in college, and I mean, it's fascinating to me what a weak grasp of true statistics most people have, you know, and you're just like, if you have, you know, 5 independent events that you're flipping a coin on, you know, that's 2 to the 5th is your denominator in terms of what the probability that all land the way you want them to. And you're taking on a huge outsized risk if you have these independent factors that all may go one way or not, you know, and once you compound them, you find yourself, you know, potentially taking on a massive amount of more risk than you might have, you know, really realized just looking at, you know, everything as a whole. So I fully agree with what you're saying there, that, you know, all those independent risk factors really tally up. And, you know, it's great to chase projections, but once you realize all the things that have to happen to hit those projections, you know, that's, you know, I think one of the most important parts for especially new investors to look at.
Well, especially when values have gone up so high so quickly that the margin of error is so thin versus, we're more like cash flow, like we're still syndicating, but we just realized that for that IRR hurdle to hit, everything has to go super smooth in the next 5 years. And so it's like, all right, we want to make sure there's, you know, we're not buying nothing, but we just want to make sure there's enough margin of error to execute on those things and having those, which is hard in multifamily. So especially with everyone buying bridge debt and going through it.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, it's all about controlling the variables you can to, you know, really operational risk management, right? It was something we used to do in the flying world when I was, you know, flying jets for the Air Force. It was something, there's a lot of risks out there with flying, you know, there's a lot of stuff you just can't control, right? You know, I can't control the micro weather patterns. I can't control what's happening in a combat environment on the ground per se, but there's a lot of things I can, you know, I can use the intel I have. I can use weather forecasts to at least plan my route to avoid known risks. And that's what we try to do, you know, in the industrial side with that triple net lease structure. And, you know, ultimately you find over time, you know, of the two components of an investment, usually are cash flow during the hold and appreciation on the end, right? And investors are usually optimizing for one or the other. You know, in a multifamily, usually your cash flow is more valuable, the target of a much bigger appreciation pop when you sell. And industrial is a little different. Industrial is hyper consistent cash flow up front, and then, you know, some modest value add. But again, you know, everything's somewhat market dependent on that back end. But, you know, I tell folks, hey, if I can deliver 8 to 10% per year in monthly distributions hyper regularly, and then give you a, you know, a conservative estimate of some profit on the end, that's not a bad value proposition when you look at kind of the reduced risk of that investment type.
Yeah. And I think the bond, the real estate wrapped in the bond is like a huge piece that I think that like locked it in is like, well, if you have all really high credit rated, obviously life happens and COVID happens, but it's the real estate can mitigate that downside risk of the bond and give it upside too. But like you said, hey, would you be interested in 8 to 10% cash flow? I think that alone, most investors would be like, I'm in, especially given like, I think expectations for investors have stayed the same despite values almost doubling over 2 years. So it's hard.
No, I agree there. And, you know, we've found our back end projections, you know, how much profit we expect to sell for in 4 to 5 years. We've shrank that over the years. Because I mean, honestly, I don't know how long this run will go, right? And I become, you know, as we continue on this, you know, strong run, I become less and less confident of, you know, a killer exit. So we've really tried to shrink expectations on the back end. And who knows, right? Ideally we were able to exceed those, but, you know, it's all about managing expectations in a way that is in line with, you know, kind of the outlook we're seeing today.
Yeah, no, it's expectation management is huge. And just, I mean, it's going in with like, I think this is the case based on everything going on, but also past performance, does that mean future expectations?
Exactly.
And I think we're just seeing, all right, 8% rent growth for 5 years. It's like, well, if something were to happen and you miss that mark, and it's only 3 or 5 with the CPI, how is the financing on the triple net and industrial? Is it? Because I know multifamily, we primarily focus on longer term agency debt, but what's that debt look like on your side of the world?
Yeah, no, I mean, the agency debt for multifamily is amazing. So that's, you know, that's one of the really, you know, critical advantages of multifamily there. But, you know, in the rest of the commercial real estate world, industrial included, you know, typically we're seeing kind of two categories of debt. We can either go non-recourse, which is usually CMBS debt. That tends to be kind of rigid, longer term oriented. You know, usually the rates are, they're competitive in today's market around 4%. But you know, you end up with these very serious prepayment penalties. So you're kind of locked in on a long-term hold. Otherwise you just get hammered with yield maintenance and, you know, basically prepayment penalties.
The non-recourse comes at a price.
It always does. Yeah. So we actually, as a firm, you know, we've kind of decided, look, you know, we're going to support these deals anyways. We might as well sign recourse debt. So the sponsors, you know, our two principals, they're signing personal guarantees on probably 90-95% of the debt we take on. But because of that, we're able to get much better debt terms, usually lower interest rate, much more flexible terms where we can, you know, we can sell after 2 years if the right deal comes around, or we can hold it for 10, right? And having that kind of fixed rate consistency means, hey, you know what, if 4 to 5 years comes, my targeted horizon, and let's say the market's, you know, in the trash, right? Who knows, right? It might just be nobody's buying and selling, but if I have a performing tenant, now I still got 5 extra years of fixed rate debt. I don't have to worry about refinancing. I don't have to sell. I just sit there. I collect, you know, 8 to 10% a year for my investors. No one's complaining, right? I just wait it out 2-3 years. Historically, even the lowest recessions recover, and you know, I'll be in a better spot then. So that, you know, the key is just structuring it in a way where you're not kind of backed into a corner. You know, and you have options, you have flexibility. And also with that 20-year lease, you know, if my target's 4 to 5 years, I can hold it longer. You know, I can hold it 15 extra years, you know, like
that'll definitely, I think that's a long enough time just in case. Any downturn happens.
Exactly. Right. So, I mean, usually that's not my plan, but having options like that's nice where, you know, you're not being forced to react to unknown market conditions there.
Is that like with the recourse, is that like a regional bank or like
almost always?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We're finding, you know, there's opportunity. Right now, like in major metros, it's very hard to find deals. You know, buying in like Phoenix or Dallas Fort Worth area.
I mean, those terrible deals, markets for multifamily too.
Oh, exactly, right. And the reason being is because you have so much institutional money that's only focusing on those, you know, quote unquote grade A markets. The great thing about industrial is I don't need to be in a great school district. I don't need to be in a low crime area. I don't need to
be right.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't need traffic count. None of that really matters, right? All I need is a great tenant in a building that works for them. Most of the time they've been there 40, 50 years. It can be secondary. It can even be a little tertiary. That's fine. Coupled with the right credit. If I feel good enough about the tenant and the quality of that tenant in there, I'm okay with that, you know, and it's still a cash flow machine. And honestly, the dirtier the industry, the better. I mean, we bought
job
this
security.
Oh yeah. I mean, we bought this, it was an industrial like e-waste recycler, out in, I think it was Illinois about a year ago. And this company, you know, I did the property tour. We're walking through, I mean, there's like airborne, like silicone dust in the air and there's giant, you know, backhaul. Oh, it was wild. It was like getting dark and you just, these big, huge, I mean, we're talking, you know, 40 foot tall, mounds of computer, like crushed up computer chips, stuff like that. I mean, they had lithium radiators being stripped and grinded. I mean, it was one of the messiest, but enclosed kind of professionally ran operations I'd seen. And I'm like, you know what, this is great because this is not an industry that can just pick up and move anywhere they want. Right.
No.
I mean, very few areas are like, hey,
bring EPA all that is over, not letting that go. They're like,
no, exactly. You know, but you know, it works for the county they're in. They've been there a long time. They employ a lot of the local population and the local lenders, they see that and they say, hey, you know what? Like we know this company, this is in our backyard. You know, we're located in the same county here. Yes, we would be happy to lend on this. This is an owner and a company that we know well, and we are, you know, kind of vested in the long-term relationship with them.
Yeah. They're not Amazon, but they get the job done.
Exactly. Yeah. And honestly, like the stickier, the better from that kind of stuff. I mean, a funny story, we bought the real estate around a aerospace parts manufacturer in the DFW area a few years ago. And I remember walking the facility, you know, and I asked him, I said, hey, you know, like how basically committed are you to this site? You know, are you going to outgrow it, et cetera? And they're like, let me put it this way. these machines that produce these big wing spars and, you know, all these fuselage parts, right? They're like, we literally, the way we build these machines, these buildings, is we have to pour concrete. We place and fix the machines on that concrete, and then we build the real estate around it. So talk about a sticky tenant. They would literally have to cut out the wall to ever get that equipment removed.
And just I'm like, the claw this is machine the kind of... to move this thing.
Exactly. Just pull the roof off. Right. I mean, but the, I mean, honestly, that is the type of, you know, the industries in the industrial side. And I love it because it, you know, it creates much more barriers to, you know, even thinking about moving, even if you had the ability. So.
Yeah. And I think too, I think at least for me, when I think triple net, I just think of like Amazon warehouse all day. And it's just like,
yep.
There's a lot more perspective and color you've provided on it. So that's
so much more. Yeah. Yeah. And that Amazon, hey, don't get me wrong. I mean, you're going to get your rent paid on time, but you're also going to get minimal cash flow because there's minimal risk. Right. Yeah. And everyone knows Amazon's not going to default on their lease obligation. And because of that certainty, you're not going to get much yield. So, you know, really the balance, like anything, is finding that right mix of risk and returns.
Absolutely. Same with multifamily. It's
yep.
The class A doctors who will probably be there forever, or eventually, like the risk is they buy a home. So
yeah,
it's hitting on that service piece. But thank you, Neil. Thank you so much for coming on and adding value. We'd love to hear your one investor pro tip for our listeners out there.
I think my biggest thing is there's intelligence and wisdom in groups. And I've felt more stronger and stronger about this the longer I've been in the commercial real estate investment industry. And, you know, you can never see all the pitfalls or the true opportunity of a deal on your own. And that's so great to, you know, especially if you're kind of new into a new asset class that you might not be really familiar with, find an investment group where there's people who have invested in that asset class, you know, make friends, make network connections, run deals by each other. You know, I find most investors are more than happy to kind of weigh in on, you know, have some social status within an investment, you know, network club or a circuit like that. And such a great way to, you know, kind of ease into a new asset class as you, you know, kind of understand and learn on your own.
I think all real estate, if you're an outsider, if you're like super protective behind the scenes, like don't look at anything, don't share anything. Mm-hmm. Everyone in real estate has been like, oh, let me help you. Let me show you this. Let me do this.
Right.
Interview.
People love it. Yeah.
That's how we got here. So,
yeah.
So it's just like, it's been a very, very powerful, and it truly is real estate's a group unlike any other, where it's like, there's not that many secrets. We all know and can add value to each other's lives. And it's amazing to see.
Well, I think very few people start in commercial real estate, right? Almost everyone has a bit of a circuitous path on how they eventually landed there. And so everyone had their first, you know, entry moment, you know, unless you grew up in a commercial real estate family, which is not very many of us. I mean, everyone got here somehow. And I think that kind of common pathway really is a great bonding point.
Yeah. 5 years as a CPA. I don't know how I did it.
There you go. I went pilot to real estate. So, you know, it was
a lot of weird.
Anyone can fall into it.
Yeah, exactly. But Neil, if anyone wanted to reach out to you or learn more about your group or triple net leases, what's the best way they can reach out to you?
Yeah. And, you know, check out our website. We have some really just good education on there. It's www.magcp. That's for Mag Capital Partners.com. Or just shoot me a note. I'd love to hear feedback on the podcast or any questions, or if you're interested in joining our investment group, that's Neil, N-E-I-L. At magcp.com.
Awesome. Well, Neil, you crushed the podcast. I'll tell you here first. thank you so much. Thank you so much for being on, and look forward to connecting later. And for those who have questions for me, please reach out to me at mikeT@randcre.com. And until then, we'll see you next week.